Tune Review and Speaking to the Blind, celebrating 40 years of audio newspaper production. Welcome to this week's edition of the National Podcast, recorded at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre by our amazing volunteers. You can get in touch with us via Facebook, Twitter or Instagram using @TuneReview, that is @CUEANDREVIEW. You can also contact us directly by emailing information@tunereview.com. That is information@CUEANDREVIEW.com or by calling 0141 772 3976. That's 0141 772 3976.
This is from The National on Friday, the 1st of September 2023, from the politics section. Edinburgh Yes Rally. Jamie Hepburn debunks claim SNP is organising. This article is written by Laura Pollock. Scotland's Minister for Independence has said it is not factually accurate to claim this weekend's Yes Rally has been organised by SNP. Ahead of Saturday's march and rally for an independent Scotland in the EU, Minister Jamie Hepburn told The National the event is clearly grassroots-led, with no individual political party affiliation. Critics have claimed the rally is being organised behind the scenes by the SNP to ensure control over the First Minister's appearance in front of the movement, after excusing themselves from previous rallies organised by more critical branches. However, Hepburn has debunked this claim. That's just not factually accurate. It's clearly being organised by Believe in Scotland and Yes for EU, Hepburn said. He added, yes, of course the First Minister and I are SNP politicians, but a lot of people are speaking. Lorna Slater, she's clearly not an SNP parliamentarian. There's Brian Cox, and then there's people who are, as far as I know, not overly associated with any one individual political party, but they believe in independence. So, I think that's not quite accurate to make that claim. Hepburn also reflected on his first political march in 1985, where he joined his mother, a teacher, at the launch of aerial messages for a campaign by the Educational Institute of Scotland. A five-year-old Hepburn joined members to release 430 purple helium-filled balloons in George Square, with messages directed to then-Secretary of State for Scotland, George Younger, and to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, stating, "Give teachers a fair deal. The people of Scotland want it, and Scottish education demands it." Now, as first-ever Minister for Independence, Hepburn is set to speak at a rally. He said, "I was very happy to accept the invitation. I was almost certainly going to come along to the march and rally. I have no aversion to them. I think they've got an important place as part of political activism in terms of demonstrating the campaign is still there. That's particularly relevant for this one because clearly we're still in a position where, despite being there being a pro-independent Scottish government, plus a majority pro-independence parliament voted for by the people, we still have a transient UK government who are denying the outcome of that election. So, let's get people on the street to remind them and the rest of the world that we're still here, still campaigning." Hepburn said the alliance between Believe in Scotland and Yes for EU offers another reminder to the world's media, Scotland has not forgotten being removed from the EU against its will, and we're still campaigning hard to make sure, through independence, we can re-engage with Europe. He spoke to The National before heading out to campaign in Rutherglen and Hamilton West. He said, "The ultimate and most important thing we can be doing is going out to communities and engaging with those who we've got to persuade. Hopefully, an event like this could energise folk up and encourage them to do just that, to get out there and speak to the people we need to convince." That article was written by Laura Pollock. This is from The National on Friday, the 1st of September 2023, from the politics section. George Fulks to intensify campaign to stop Holyrood illegal spending. This article is written by Adam Robertson. Labour peer George Fulks has said he will be intensifying his campaign to stop illegal spending by the Scottish Government when recess ends. The former MSP and MP, who has previously insisted the idea of an equal union, was nothing more than a myth, also referred to Scotland's leadership as an elected dictatorship. Fulks has argued for years that Holyrood should not be able to spend on matters relating to independence, given constitutional matters are reserved to Westminster. It comes after we previously reported how the UK government was investigating Scottish government spending on a Minister for Independence. Fulks previously appeared to produce an email which seemed to confirm that Advocate General Keith Stewart had ordered his staff to probe spending, although sources within the Scotland Office initially denied the existence of this to multiple outlets. Following this, however, Fulks then challenged the UK's top civil servant, Simon Case, on whether or not such spending was being looked at. Case said that civil servants in Scotland and Wales can only spend their money on areas that are within their competence. Asked specifically about the work of Jamie Hepburn, he replied, "We are looking at some of these specifics as we speak and doing that with ministers at the moment to see whether we need to issue further guidance and clarification to civil servants about what is and is not appropriate spending. I don't want to prejudice the outcome of that." Many took to X, formerly known as Twitter, to criticise Fulks for his comments. MSP for Aberdeen Central, Kevin Stewart, said, "George proving his buffoonery once again by using the phrase elected dictatorship. He will never get over the fact that the people have voted the way they have and not the way he wishes." Another pointed out that it probably wasn't the best idea for an unelected peer to stop the elected Scottish government from doing what it was elected to do. These thoughts were echoed by a third user, who said Fulks was using his unelected privilege to attack your country's elected parliament. We also previously told how Labour distanced themselves from their peers' calls for the UK government to step in and prevent spending on independence. Keir Starmer said that he had not seen what was said and so was not in a position to comment, while Sarwar said it was not the government's role to impose restrictions on Scottish government spending. He added he had not seen the particular comments Fulks had made. A Scottish government spokesperson said, "The First Minister has appointed a ministerial team that reflects the priorities that he will pursue in government, including tackling child poverty, improving public services, building a fairer, greener economy, and giving people the information about devolution and independence that they need to make an informed choice about Scotland's constitutional future. It is the role of the civil service to support the elected government of the day in developing and implementing its policies." That article was written by Adam Robertson. This is from The National on Friday, the 1st of September 2023, from the news section. Threat of strike action at Scottish Water over pay and conditions. This article is written by Ross Hunter. Scottish Water workers could take strike action over claims the organisation attempted to force through changes to pay and conditions without agreement. The GMB trade union consulted members on industrial action after accusing the body of acting in bad faith, claiming they contacted staff directly to detail a pay offer linked to a new grading structure. Unions say they are in formal dispute with Scottish Water and claim managers sent an email to all staff detailing a new proposed structure without consultation or agreement. GMB Scotland say 91% of their members within the organisation turned out in the consultative ballot, with 83% supporting industrial action. The PA News Agency understands other unions, including Unite and Unison, were also balloting members, and results are expected to show the same support for action. Unions say they will fix dates for formal ballots unless meaningful discussions with Scottish Water restart. Claire Greer, GMB Scotland organiser, said, "Management has created this dispute by riding roughshod over every accepted procedure for negotiating with staff. Management now need to sort it out. They have tried to divide and rule. They have tried to sideline the unions and go to the workers directly with a partial version of their plans, but the workers have seen right through it. Instead of acting like a rogue employer and creating needless conflict and uncertainty, the company should be engaging constructively to resolve this dispute." A Scottish Water spokesperson said, "We continue to seek negotiations with trade unions over a very fair and reasonable proposal to increase every employee's pay by at least 8% and modernise our pay structure in a way that our colleagues are demanding." That article was written by Ross Hunter.
From The National, Monday the 4th of September, from the news section, "Gavin Williamson sanctioned for bullying Wendy Morton," by political reporter Hamish Morrison. A Tory former cabinet minister has been told to deliver an unreserved apology to a colleague he was found to have bullied after he was snubbed for tickets to the Queen's funeral. Gavin Williamson, who served as Defence Secretary and most recently as Minister without portfolio, was found to have sent offensive and intimidating texts to then-government Chief Whip, Wendy Morton, after he was passed over for an invite to the Queen Elizabeth's funeral in September last year. The funeral was held in Westminster Abbey, while Williamson, now retired to the backbenches, was in the Cabinet. Williamson resigned from government after his texts to Morton were revealed and other allegations about his conduct were made public, including an exchange where he warned his colleague, "There is a price for everything." He additionally told the then Chief Whip, a position he had also previously held, her conduct in excluding him from the ceremony was absolutely disgusting, adding that she had chosen to F, asterisk, asterisk, K, us all over. Williamson also faced allegations he had bullied colleagues in other cabinet posts, something he strongly denied. Parliament's sleaze watchdog, the independent expert panel, ordered the former Prime Minister to make an unreserved apology to Morton in the House of Commons and to undertake behaviour training. The National has approached Williamson for comment. And that article was by political reporter Hamish Morrison. From The National, Monday the 4th of September, in the news section, "Hamza Yousaf will unleash Scottish economy," says Minister. By political reporter Hamish Morrison. Scotland's economic potential will be unleashed when Hamza Yousaf unveils his political vision this week, a senior minister has said. Wellbeing Economy Secretary Neil Gray told the BBC's Sunday Show that the First Minister's World Keynote speech setting out the Annual Programme for Government, PFG, on Tuesday would include announcements on renewable energy and getting people into work. Considering the SNP had lost the confidence of Scotland's business community, Gray said the government was working to reset the relationship with the private sector and pledged to make the country a better place to do business. The Scottish Government is officially committed to the concept of a wellbeing economy, where other metrics like the health and happiness of the population are used as measures of policy success, as well as the conventional metric of economic growth. But Gray stressed that SNP were still committed to pursuing economic growth, which would put the party at odds with their coalition partners, the Scottish Greens, who consider the concept of a relic of outdated economic thinking that is driving the destruction of the planet. Unleashing Scotland's potential. Asked what the public could expect from Yousaf's announcement on Tuesday, Gray told the BBC, There is a lot in this PSG for people that are interested in the economy to be excited about. We are looking to make sure that we are doing all we can within the powers that we have to unleash economic potential, whether that is in renewable energy or supporting our first-class business, ensuring that they have a good operating base, a good landscape within which to do business, supporting people to start their own business, and supporting people into work to ensure that we have the labour market supply there to ensure our businesses continue to thrive and flourish. Host Martin Geisler pressed the Minister in a recent survey, which found that 9% of businesses thought the Scottish Government understood their concerns. Gray pointed to the Government's creation of the New Deal for Business Group, chaired by Dr. Poonam Malik, and said he had conducted more than 75 meetings with businesses of all sizes. I'm very pleased about the very fast-paced work that has been done there, and credit to Dr. Poonam Malik and all those who went on the New Deal for Business Group for coming forward with a range of suggestions that that the First Minister has agreed to, and there is now an implementation plan ongoing, he said. Challenged again on the findings of the survey, and asked why trust between the government and industry had broken down, Gray said, "There's two things to say about that, Martin. First of all, I do care. The government does care about business. We know we cannot have a good society without a good economy, and vice versa. So obviously, we're wanting to make sure that we support our private sector partners and businesses to ensure that they can continue to grow, continue to make investments that will make the difference in us building a well-being economy. But also, secondly, you're right. It does take time to rebuild trust, and we're going to be judged on our actions, not just our words, and I very much understand that. That's why this summer recess, I've engaged in more than 75 external engagements, a lot of those with individual businesses as well as representative organisations, listening to them, understanding the issues that they have right now. The cost of living crisis is impacting them massively. The interest rate rises. The Westminster-controlled cost of living crisis is having a devastating impact on our businesses." Asked whether he supported the pursuit of economic growth, Gray said he wanted to see an economy which was fair, green and growing. He said, "We are a party of economic growth. We say we want to build a well-being economy that is fair, green and growing, and it appears that both Labour and the Tories have abandoned the first two parts of that, which is fair and green. We will continue to espouse an economy that is working for its people, but we'll have to have the interests of businesses at heart as well, because they do generate the wealth that we need to ensure that we continue to invest in public services." The Minister would not be drawn on whether the plans outlined in the PFG later this week would necessitate tax rises. One announcement expected in the major parliamentary set piece are measures to encourage employers to move to a four-day week, the Herald and Sunday reported. The paper reported that USAF was expected to confirm a four-day working week would be piloted within parts of the public sector by the end of the calendar year. And that article was by political reporter Hamish Morrison. From the National, Monday the 4th of September. From the news section, Scotland leading charge as Hamza Yousaf eyes 4-day work week, by content editor Xander Eliards. Scotland has been praised for leading the charge after reports that Hamza Yousaf will bring in a 4-day working week for some public sector workers. In his programme for government, which is due to be published this week as Holyrood returns from recess, Yousaf is expected to spell out concrete policies in an attempt to put failures with the Deposit Return Scheme, DRS, and Highly Protected Marine Areas, HPMAs, behind him. The four-day working week is expected to be trialled for 12 months in the public sector, with an eye on a wider rollout if it's judged to be a success. A four-day working week does not necessarily mean a person will only work 4 days, according to the four-day week campaign. Instead, 32 hours of work could be spread over more days in order to help employees achieve a more healthy work-life balance. In 2022, A 6-month pilot scheme saw 61 British companies employing 2,900 people, and with 56 of them pledging to continue the setup in some form. Scottish Government advisers reportedly hope that if a successful trial of the scheme in parts of the Scottish public sector could act as a catalyst for wider change in the private sector as well. Joe Ryle, the director of the 4-day-week campaign, praised the initiative. He said, "This is fantastic news and builds upon all the evidence from across the world, which shows that a 4-day-week with no loss of pay both increases productivity and improves work-life balance." The 4-day-week has been extremely successful for many businesses in the private sector already, so it's only right and fair to see if those benefits can be applied to the public sector. 100 years ago, we moved from a 6-day-week to a 5-day-week. It's great to see Scotland now leading the charge towards a 4-day-week. But the Taxpayers Alliance, a pressure group pushing for lower taxes, criticised the plans. John O'Connell, the group's chief executive, said, "Scots have no appetite for a part-time public sector. A 4-day-week with no loss of pay will mean either worse services or a huge cost to taxpayers if the promised productivity gains don't pay off." The Scottish Government should abandon plans for this bonkers experiment and stop the clock off. A 2022 report from the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development, CIPD, stated, "We find that an average Scots work 35.9 hours per week, just over a 5-day week if we assume a 7-hour day, with an hour for lunch. Many, however, work significantly more than that. Over a fifth work more than 42 hours per week, a 6-day week, and over a tenth work more than 49 hours per week, a 7-day week. In addition to working patterns, it is also crucial to recognise individual employee preferences. Our analysis of the ONS Labour Force Survey finds that the vast majority of Scots, 63%, are happy with the hours they work. Around 30% would like to work fewer hours, but only 12% would accept a pay cut for this. That leaves 18% of Scots who are looking for fewer hours without a reduction in pay." The report plans will form part of a Programme for Government, PFG, which the SNP have said will aim to unleash economic potential. Speaking on Sunday, Wellbeing Economy Secretary Neil Gray, a close ally of the First Minister, said, "There is a lot in this PFG for people that are interested in the economy to be excited about. We are looking to make sure we are doing what we can, within the powers that we have, to unleash economic potential, whether that is in renewable energy or supporting our first-class business, ensuring that they have a good operating base, a good landscape within which to do business, supporting people to start their own businesses, and supporting people into work to ensure we have the labour market supply that is there to ensure our businesses continue to thrive and flourish." And that article was by Xander Eliards. From the National, Monday the 4th of September, in the news section, tighter rules around phones in Scottish schools being considered. This article is by Steph Braun. Stricter rules around the use of mobile phones in schools are being considered by Education Secretary Jenny Gilruth, amid concerns they are detrimental to brain development. The ex-modern studies teacher told The Times she is very interested in a UN report that recommends banning phones to improve concentration and reduce bullying. However, she has said a complete ban would be pretty much impossible in this day and age. Phones are set to be banned for students in the Netherlands next year, while, in France, children up to the age of 15 have to leave their phones switched off during the school day. Gilruth said she is considering ordering research into the effect tighter phone policies could have, given she has heard teachers are now struggling to confiscate devices. She said, "When I was last in schools, 2015, I could confiscate a phone and I could put it in a brown envelope and the child would not get it back until the next day. Colleagues say they cannot do that today. The young person says it is my right to have my phone." Some people can argue phones can be a great learning device and be used in the classroom to support learning and teaching. "I worry about young people growing up with the pressures of social media. I am so old, when I was at school, we did not have social media. If something awful happened at the weekend, it was not posted online. Life can be lived out on that device, and, equally, I think that device can affect brain development, the way in which you process information. I think it can be detrimental to that. Shirley Ann Somerville, Gilruth's predecessor, rejected the ban on mobile phones after a consultation from Westminster on ideas such as mobile free days. Some Scottish schools have already looked into the idea. Kilgraston School in Perthshire reported improved human interaction after a ban on phone use in school hours. The Glasgow Gaelic School has also agreed to ban phone use during and between classes with the support of pupils, while hundreds of parents signed a petition urging Dunbar Grammar School to look at limiting use this summer. UNESCO, the Education, Science and Culture arm of the UN, looked at 200 education systems worldwide and estimated that 1 in 6 had banned smartphones. UNESCO said several studies found that bans improved academic performance, while allowing access was distracting and gave the potential for cyberbullying. Gilruth, who has been in her current post since March, said she was concerned about how attachment to phones could be diminishing enthusiasm for reading in children. She said, "I like to read to calm myself down, and it uses a different part of your brain, I think. We want to encourage those techniques in our young people. I think that a lot of teenagers are spending a lot of time on these devices into the small hours, and that is affecting learning and teaching. I think banning them would be pretty much impossible in the current context, but I do think we need to have more of a measured approach to technology." And that report was by Steph Braun. From The National, Thursday the 7th of September, from the comment section: "Protection from prejudice must be for everybody, not just politicians," by columnist Joanna Cherry. There was plenty to welcome in this week's programme for government. I applaud the recognition of the need for state support to boost green industries and create new jobs, as has been done in the USA. It is also good to see land reform back in the agenda. And I particularly welcome the commitments to continuing action on disability rights and drug deaths, and increasing the pay of social care workers in direct care roles. I have seen it firsthand how hard these people work, and how important their contribution is to our society. We must work towards giving them a wage which recognises an increasingly vital contribution to caring for our ageing population. But what I like most of all is the First Minister's focus on supporting women, his recognition that women are disproportionately affected by the pressures of modern life, and the measures he announced to address this, including expanding childcare. I was also delighted to hear the FM speak out against misogyny and against the harassment and the violence to which women are subjected too often in our society. I am not convinced that legislating to criminalise misogyny is the way to go. Great care would require to be taken that any legislation did not run counter to the free speech protections in the European Convention on Human Rights, ECHR, and the Human Rights Act, HRA. That said, a bill on misogyny, although problematic, would at least allow the issue to be properly explored in the Scottish Parliament. However, I would prefer to see the Scottish Government legislate to make sure that the law recognises that women can be as vulnerable to offending behaviour motivated by prejudice as the other groups protected under Part 1 of the Hate Crime and Public Order, Scotland Act, which consolidated existing law in this area. Not taking the opportunity to protect women from crimes aggravated by prejudice has sent out the wrong signal. It really cannot be right that a male cabinet secretary is better protected from hate crime than an ordinary working class woman. The police lost no time in arresting and charging someone for allegedly shouting "deviant" at Patrick Harvey, while the young men who displayed disgusting signs advocating extreme violence against women at a rally in Glasgow earlier this year have seemed very hard to track down, despite their photographs being plastered across the media after unwitting politicians were photographed standing in front of them. Even worse, a middle-aged woman taking part in a peaceful demonstration in Aberdeen in July was attacked and punched in the face by a man trying to steal her banner. Rather than charging him with assault, the police let him off with a warning. So much for zero tolerance of violence against women. Again, the contrast between the treatment of the perpetrator of this attack and the perpetrator of the alleged verbal assault in Patrick Harvey is quite striking. Feminist groups have written to Police Scotland expressing their concern about the police's decision to merely issue a warning where a woman was injured while exercising her right to free speech. They have yet to receive a response. A similar letter to the Lord Advocate elicited a response from a Crown Office and Procurator Fiscal Service official, which failed to address most of the points raised. Section 6 of the Human Rights Act states that it is unlawful for a public authority to act in a way which is incompatible with a convention right. Article 10 of the ECHR protects freedom of expression. Article 11 includes protection for freedom of assembly. The Equality and Human Rights Commission have said that the HRA requires all public bodies, including the police, to respect and protect the human rights of all. How seriously the police take assaults on women meeting peacefully to discuss and assert their lawful beliefs will affect how their rights under Articles 10 and 11 can be safely exercised. It seems to me that the police failed to properly fulfil their HRA duties in the way they dealt with the Aberdeen case, and that the guidance they are following may not be human rights compliant. I would like to see our existing laws against violence against women properly enforced, and the human rights of women put in front and centre of government policy, and by all public bodies. The lackadaisical approach to the violence and the threat of it against women described above is not confined to Scotland. In England, a violent criminal was recently acquitted of charge of inciting violence against women despite video evidence. At the Trans Plus Pride rally in London on 8th of July, Sarah Jane, formerly Alan Baker, who served 30 years in prison for crimes, including kidnapping, torture and attempted murder, told the crowd, "If you see a TERF, punch them in the F**king face." This incitement and the response of the whooping cheering crowd were captured on film. TERF stands for Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminist. It is a slur often accompanied by misogynistic and sexualised threats. It is used against women who recognise the fact that men commit violence at greater rates than women, and that men cannot become women by changing their name, clothing or parts of their anatomy. This belief is also termed gender critical. Initially, the Metropolitan Police brushed off women's complaints about Baker's threatening words. Only after multiple complaints from women and a public outcry did they arrest Baker. Despite his history of extreme violence and the evidence captured on video, the court accepted his explanation that his words were a joke, merely intended to get him some publicity in newspaper headlines. As a result of this travesty, feminists in England have written a public letter to the Prime Minister asking him to act against the escalating threats and campaign of intimidation against women and to reform a criminal justice system that is failing women. So far, the letter has gathered more than 10,000 signatures. You can read the letter from which I have quoted above here at www.sexmatters.org/posts/updates/prime-minister-will-you-stand-up-violence-against-women. I would like to see our FM take similar action, and what he said in his programme for government speech gives me hope that he will. I would also like to see all our political leaders and political parties lead by example by having policies of zero tolerance of misogyny. Party members and staffers should not be able to bully, abuse or threaten women in social media or elsewhere without disciplinary action. Finally, a word to male readers who may fear that their rights could be overlooked. Of course, I recognise that not all men are part of the sort of toxic masculinity described above. The FM spoke about how positive masculinity can help us all build healthier relationships and lead to better mental health and well-being for men and boys. I am acutely aware of the pressures that men, young and old, face in our society. In order to understand this better, I spent time this summer with men from the Andes Men's Club and the Men's Shed movement, learning about how men are getting together to offer each other peer support. the FM has promised new human rights legislation in Scotland. We should always remember that human rights are universal and must be available to everyone. And that was a comment piece by Joanna Cherry. From the National, Monday the 4th of September, from the Culture section, ITV GMB Richard Madeley on Alan Partridge comparisons. Article by Joshua Serrell. Good Morning Britain's Richard Madeley doesn't care about being compared to Alan Partridge. The 67-year-old presenter has often been likened to Steve Coogan's comedy character since becoming a regular host of ITV's morning show. But he says he isn't concerned about the comparison unless it has an impact on his career. Speaking on the How to Be 60 podcast, Richard said, I do Good Morning Britain a lot now, and I discovered that I only have to cough or sneeze in the wrong direction to get extraordinary abuse on Twitter. I mean, really amazing stuff. When asked if he worried about being misrepresented as a real-life Alan Partridge, he replied, You have to analyse these things and be scrupulously realistic. If it affected the way I do the job, if it threw me off balance, it would be a problem. It would matter. But it's not. It's just abuse. I honestly don't care. Meanwhile, Richard also used his appearance on the podcast to take aim at TV presenters who let success go to their heads. The Star, who previously hosted This Morning, said, There are a lot of people in television on screen who it goes to their heads. We all know them. And you can see that they think because they have access to people's living rooms through the TV, it makes them somehow better. And I just think it actually makes them look ridiculous. Richard continued, Quite quickly I formed a contempt for people in television who think it makes them in any way, shape or form special, because it doesn't. Just because you can read the autocue or learn a short piece to camera out in the field, why would you think that would make you better than anybody else? And that article was by Joshua Serrell.
From the National, on Tuesday, the 5th of September 2023. From the Politics section. Scottish Government to trial 4-day working week by end of 2023. This article was written by Laura Pollock. The Scottish Government will bring in a 4-day working week for some public sector workers, with trials beginning this year. Whilst not mentioned in his 30-minute address to the Scottish Parliament on Monday, the pledge is in Humza Yousaf's Programme for Government, PFG. The 4-day working week is expected to be trialled for 12 months in the public sector, with an eye on a wider rollout if it's judged to be a success. In the coming year, under public service reform, Yousaf's PFG states, Commence the 4-day working week public sector pilot by the end of this calendar year to assess the well-being, environmental and productivity benefits the 4-day working week could bring. A 4-day working week does not necessarily mean a person will only work 4 days, according to the 4-day week campaign. Instead, 32 hours of work could be spread over more days in order to help employees achieve a healthier work-life balance. The Scottish Greens said, A shift to this model could revolutionise the way we live and work. The Scottish Greens Party and parliamentary staff have already adopted a 4-day working week with positive results, the party said. They added, better work-life balance, less stress, and being better able to deal with stressful situations and more control over their lives are just some of the benefits they've reported. The party's economy spokesperson, Maggie Chapman, MSP, welcomed the announcement. Chapman said, If we want to build a fairer and greener economy with good jobs, sustainable work, fair wages and economic security, then we need to be prepared to make big changes and think big. The normalisation of a 4-day working week without a loss of pay can help to create a better society where people are working to live and not living to work. The Scottish Government has an important role to play in leading by example. And I am pleased that these trials are about to begin. For some households and industries, it wouldn't necessarily be such a big transition, with lots of workers already working 4 days a week or less. However, for others, it would obviously be a big change, which is why these trials and the lessons we will get from them will be so important. The Scottish Greens and our MSPs have introduced a four-day week in our offices and have learnt a lot from doing so. We want to see similar changes in other areas as we build an economy that works for people and planet. In 2022, a six-month pilot scheme saw 61 British companies employing 2,900 people and with 56 of them pledging to continue to set up in some form. Scottish Government advisers reportedly hope that a successful trial of the scheme in parts of the Scottish public sector could act as a catalyst for wider change in the private sector as well. And that article was written by Laura Pollock. From The National, on Tuesday the 5th of September 2023, from the Politics section. Humza Yousaf's speech, What the Programme for Government Means for You. This article was written by Hamish Morrison. Humza Yousaf has unveiled his new programme for government, outlining the bills he hopes to introduce in the coming years. There are new bills planned on tenants' rights, childcare, cladding, and electoral reform, to name some areas of the government's focus in the year ahead. Here are the key points at a glance. Housing. This promises to be a chunky piece of legislation, covering a fair amount of ground to new rights for tenants as well as a rent control scheme. It will also include investment for new affordable homes, cash to make empty properties into places for people to live, and new powers for a premium council tax rate on second home owners. 4-day week. The government has also promised to introduce a 4-day week pilot for some lucky public sector employees. Details in the government's policy documents are vague. It doesn't say how many employees will participate or for how long, but it does say the pilot should start before the end of the year. Vape ban. The government will seek views on an outright ban on single-use disposable vapes amid concerns over their popularity among teenagers. Benefits. The income threshold for the Best Start Foods programme will be removed, meaning 20,000 more children and pregnant mums will get cash for milk and healthy food, the First Minister announced. Free school meals. Yousaf announced plans to roll out universal free school meals for children in primary 6 and 7, beginning with those in receipt of the Scottish Child Payment. This means children at all years of primary school will be entitled to a free school meal. Childcare. The government wants to increase access to free childcare and is offering cash to 6 councils to pilot care for children between 9 months and 2 years old. Workers in the public sector will also be guaranteed an hourly wage of £12 under the plans. Education. Plans to replace the Scottish Qualifications Authority with a new body responsible for qualifications have also been confirmed, with a bill to create the new organisation expected within the next year. The government also plans to create a new independent education inspectorate. Cladding remediation. A major issue for people who live in buildings clad with dangerous flammable material, the government wants to bring in new legislation it says will help them undertake urgent measures to remove life-endangering cladding. Electoral reform. The details on this are vague, but it says a new bill to reform candidacy rights will be informed by the government's consultation, which asked for views on, among other things, allowing 16-year-olds to become MSPs. Land reform. The government plans to reform land ownership laws, which a bill they say will further empower communities and force large holdings to deliver in the public interest. Ministers will also aim to modernise tenant farming and small landholding legislation. Misogyny. New offences of crimes against women will be created in line with the recommendations of the working group chaired by Helena Kennedy. Miscarriage. Yousaf has pledged to improve the treatment of women and their families after a miscarriage. He committed to the creation of a certificate and memorial book of pregnancy and baby loss, which was a pledge of Nicola Sturgeon's in her final weeks as First Minister. Speaking about his own experience with baby loss, the First Minister said, I know how that sense of loss, regardless of when it happens during the pregnancy, is one that stays with you for life. Each loss Nadia and I have suffered has been difficult, and there is no doubt in my mind that we can better support those who experience miscarriage. Agriculture. The government is also planning to replace common agriculture policy schemes with a new framework that, say, is focused on high-quality food production, climate mitigation and adaption, nature protection and restoration, and wilder rural development. Renewables. The Scottish Government will agree a sector deal with the onshore wind industry to halve the time required for consent to be obtained for projects. First Minister Yousaf said, "The Scottish Government is taking action to boost green industries with the limited powers we have." A9. Procurement for the dualling of a section of the A9 has begun. Humza Yousaf has said, "A similar process returned just one bid with former Transport Minister Jenny Gulruth, claiming the offer did not represent value for money." And that article was written by Hamish Morrison. From the National on Tuesday, the 5th of September 2023, from the Politics section. Humza Yousaf confirms Scotland will consider ban on disposable vapes. This article was written by Adam Robertson. Scotland could potentially ban disposable vapes under new plans unveiled by the Scottish First Minister. We previously told how campaigners have highlighted the environmental impact of the plastic tubes, which are often thrown on the ground after being used. Humza Yousaf said the Scottish Government could hold a consultation on a single-use vape ban, as he set out his priorities in the programme for government. He told the Scottish Parliament, "I hear too often about how common vaping is among our young people. In the next year, we will take action to reduce vaping, particularly among children. I'm pleased to announce that this government will consult on curbing the scale of disposable single-use vapes, including consulting an outright ban." A recent report from the Scottish Government found that around 22% of all young under 18s, around 78,000, are believed to have used a vape last year, with more young people using them than smoking cigarettes. A separate review by Zero Waste Scotland estimated that up to 2.7 million single-use vapes were littered in Scotland last year. They estimated that there were 543,000 users of e-cigarettes in Scotland and predicted that without intervention, that will rise to 900,000 by 2027. And that article was written by Adam Robertson. From the National on Tuesday, the 5th of September 2023. From the News section. A £3 million wave machine to be deployed for Orkney by Edinburgh firm. This article was written by Steph Braun. A wave machine for Orkney is set to be manufactured in Scotland after an Edinburgh energy firm secured more than £3 million in EU funding for the project. The large-scale device, named Blue Horizon 250, will be deployed in a grid connected berth at the European Marine Energy Centre, EMEC, in Orkney as early as 2025. It is hoped the project will pave the way to a small wave farm delivering 1 to 2 MW of low-carbon electricity by 2030. £3.2 million of funding has been awarded to Mosean Energy, which is one of the three firms to have been granted cash in Phase 3 of Europe Wave, an innovative EU-funded programme for wave energy technology. Company co-founder and managing director Cameron McNatt said, "We have already demonstrated our technology successfully at small scale, and this programme will help allow us to build a significantly larger machine. We are already working with a range of supply chain partners across Scotland and the UK who bring tremendous experience and professionalism to the wave energy sector. And I am confident we have the right suppliers on board to bring this ambitious project to fruition. Innovation funding is crucial for early stage technologies, and I am grateful to Europe Wave for their support, which will help leverage the additional private investment this project will require. Looking further ahead, our goal is to deliver a small array in UK waters this decade, and I'm confident that with the appropriate innovation funding in place, we can realise our ambition to build commercial wave energy arrays and generate homegrown green energy from our seas, both in the UK and around the world." Mosean Energy is already a key participant in the £2 million renewables for subsea power RSP programme, which has connected Mosean's MKW Blue X Wave energy prototype with a Halo underwater battery system developed by Aberdeen Intelligent Energy Management specialists Verloom. The two technologies are currently in the seas off Orkney, where they are delivering low carbon power and communication to infrastructure, including Baker Hughes' subsea controls equipment and a resident underwater autonomous vehicle, AUV, provided by Transmark Subsea. Blue Horizon 250 will be a significant scale-up from Blue X and is designed for commercial applications on islands and remote communities, while also including early grid projects and off-grid applications such as oil and gas and aquaculture. The deployment and demonstration of the Blue X to EMEC was funded by Wave Energy Scotland, WES. Tim Hurst, Managing Director of WES, said, "With their Blue X prototype deployed in Scapa Flow, Mosean Energy provided their technology had the right cost, performance and reliability to deliver commercial wave energy. The RSP project has successfully demonstrated the technology in a specific oil and gas application, and now Phase 3 of Europe Wave will demonstrate that the technology can scale up and ultimately be deployed in sufficient numbers to make a significant contribution to our net zero targets. To complete the full-scale 250 kW Blue Horizon program, Mosean will bring the private funding as required. The Europe Wave program is a vital catalyst to bring confidence in the industry and accelerate the technology towards commercialization," McNatt added. And that article was written by Steph Braun. From The National, on Tuesday, the 5th of September, 2023. From the news section. A £3 million wave machine to be deployed for Orkney by Edinburgh firm. This article was written by Steph Braun. A wave machine for Orkney is set to be manufactured in Scotland after an Edinburgh energy firm secured more than £3 million in EU funding for the project. The large-scale device named Blue Horizon 250 will be deployed in a grid, connected berth at the European Marine Energy Centre, EMEC, in Orkney as early as 2025. It is hoped the project will pave the way to a small wave farm delivering 1 to 2 MW of low-carbon electricity by 2030. The £3.2 million of funding has been awarded to Mosean Energy, which is one of the three firms to have been granted cash in Phase 3 of Europe Wave, an innovative EU-funded programme for wave energy technology. Company co-founder and managing director Cameron McNatt said, "We have already demonstrated our technology successfully at small scale, and this programme will help allow us to build a significantly larger machine. We are already working with a range of supply chain partners across Scotland and the UK who bring tremendous experience and professionalism to the wave energy sector. And I am confident we have the right suppliers on board to bring this ambitious project to fruition. Innovation funding is crucial for early stage technologies, and I am grateful to Europe Wave for their support, which will help leverage the additional private investment this project will require. Looking further ahead, our goal is to deliver a small array in UK waters this decade, and I am confident that with the appropriate innovation funding in place, we can realise our ambition to build commercial wave energy arrays and generate homegrown green energy from our seas, both in the UK and around the world. Mosean Energy is already a key participant in the £2 million renewables for subsea power RSP programme, which has connected Mosean's MKW Blue X Wave energy prototype with a Halo underwater battery system developed by Aberdeen Intelligent Energy Management specialists Verloom. The two technologies are currently in the seas off Orkney, where they are delivering low carbon power and communication to infrastructure, including Baker Hughes' subsea controls equipment and a resident underwater autonomous vehicle, AUV, provided by Transmark Subsea. Blue Horizon 250 will be a significant scale-up from Blue X and is designed for commercial applications on islands and remote communities, while also including early grid projects and off-grid applications such as oil and gas and aquaculture. The deployment and demonstration of the Blue X to EMEC WEC was funded by Wave Energy Scotland, WES. Tim Hurst, Managing Director of WES, said, "With their BlueX prototype deployed in Scapa Flow, Mosean Energy provided their technology had the right cost, performance and reliability to deliver commercial wave energy. The RSP project has successfully demonstrated the technology in a specific oil and gas application, and now Phase 3 of Europe Wave will demonstrate that the technology can scale up and ultimately be deployed in sufficient numbers to make a significant contribution to our net zero targets. To complete the full-scale 250 kW Blue Horizon program, Mosean will bring the private funding as required. The Europe Wave program is a vital catalyst to bring confidence in the industry and accelerate the technology towards commercialization," McNatt added. And that article was written by Steph Braun.
The National News on Wednesday, the 6th of September. 11 on trial over alleged child sex and witchcraft ring. An article written by Lauren Brownlee. 11 people have gone on trial accused of being involved in a child sex and witchcraft ring. The 7 men and 4 women face an indictment listing a total of 32 charges at the High Court in Glasgow. The alleged offences involve 4 children and are said to have occurred in the city between April 2012 and October 2020. They include claims the youngsters were raped at different times, while some of the group did clap, cheer and verbally encourage, as well as video record what was happening. One of the youngsters was said to have been shut in a microwave during an attempt to kill them. It's also alleged 2 of the children were made to take part in seances, leading them to believe they could see spirits and demons. Ian Owens, Elaine Lannery, Leslie Williams, Paul Brannan, Marianne Gallagher, Scott Forbes, Barry Watson, Mark Carr, Richard Gackagan, Leona Lang and John Clark deny the accusations they face. The 11 come from the Glasgow area, as well as East and West Dumbartonshire. Owens and Lannery first face a charge that features a claim they had a child courier-controlled drugs on their behalf. It's alleged Owens, Lannery, Williams, Brannan, Lang, Gallagher and Watson assaulted a child to the danger of her life. This included putting a black plastic bag over their head. The next charge states Owens and Lannery assaulted another child. Owens, Lannery, Williams, Brannan and Clark are accused of the attempted murder of a second child. This charge states they were made to act like a dog and eat pet food. It also alleges the group chased the child while wearing a devil mask. The murder bid charge claims the child was pushed into and trapped inside a microwave, an oven, a fridge freezer and in cupboards. Owens and Lannery are also accused of holding one of the children underwater in a bath. All 11 are next said to have made 2 children take part in seances and use a Ouija board to call on spirits and demons. They also allegedly got the children involved in witchcraft, leading them to believe that they themselves had metamorphosed into animals. The 11 are then accused of being involved in the killing of dogs while getting 2 of the youngsters to take part. Owens faces a charge of raping 1 child, including with Watson, Brannan, Clark and Forbes. Owens and Lannery were also accused of a sex abuse charge. Owens was next charged with raping another of the children. The 11, along with a woman who is now dead, were then allegedly involved in the rape of a child. It's claimed they got them to take drink and illicit drugs. The charge states that while they were being sexually assaulted, Lannery, Williams, Lang, Gallagher and the other woman did clap, cheer and verbally encourage the alleged crime, which was also video recorded. Forbes alone faces an indecent images accusation. Owens faces a further sex offence and he and Lannery are accused of abusing one of the children. Owens and Watson allegedly got a child to take part in sexual activity. Owens and Lannery are then accused of raping the same child. A further charge claims all 11, along with 2 others, now dead, also abused them and were said to have cheered while it was going on. Owens and Brannan are then accused of raping the child. Prosecutors also claim the child was made to watch footage of a youngster being abused. Lannery is said to have molested one child. The group, along with others deceased, are accused of raping the same child. One child was also said to have been made to operate a camera and create video footage of some of the abuse. Lord Beckett told jurors that the trial could last at least 5.5 weeks. An article written by Lauren Brownlee. The National News on Wednesday the 6th of September. We look at four countries which already have a four-day work week, as Scotland is set to trial the system. An article written by Adam Robertson. It's been announced that the Scottish Government plans to bring in a four-day working week for some public sector workers, with trials due to begin later this year. Although not explicitly mentioned in his address to Holyrood on Monday, the pledge is in Humza Yousaf's Programme for Government. The Programme for Government states that the Scottish Government will commence the four-day working week public sector pilot by the end of this calendar year to assess the well-being, environmental and productivity benefits the four-day working week could bring. According to the four-day week campaign, the system does not necessarily mean a person will only work 4 days. Instead, 32 hours of work could potentially be spread over more days in order to help employees achieve a healthier work-life balance. Here are some of the countries across the world which are already using the system. At the beginning of 2022, the Belgian government announced a reform package that gives workers the right to work 4 days rather than 5 without officially losing their salary. Under the scheme, workers are still expected to maintain the same amount of hours over 4 slightly longer days rather than 5 and receive an extra day off to compensate this. However, employers can still turn down a request for a shortened week on condition they submit their refusal in writing and do so for solid reasons. From 2015 to 2019, Iceland led one of the largest 4-day workweek pilots to date, with around 2,500 people participating. The trial was considered as an overwhelming success among researchers, with employees reporting improved well-being, work-life balance and productivity. In 2022, workers represented by unions in Iceland, close to 90% of the workforce, have won the right to request a shorter work week. However, uptake in the private sector has remained low, with many organisations placing the onus on the individual to negotiate for work time reductions instead of offering the 4-day week as an automatic benefit. Major companies in Japan, including Microsoft and Panasonic, have already piloted 4-day working weeks. Others have implemented it permanently, including banking giant Mizuho and tech firm Cross River, with their CEO being a vocal advocate for the system. According to a report from PayScale, the share of companies offering a 4-day working week reached the 10% threshold for the first time last year. More than 500 employees at 28 companies are participating in South Africa's trial of a 4-day working week. The experiment is being run by 4-Day Week South Africa, with 28 companies and more than 500 employees involved. The experiment uses what's known as a 100-80-100 model, whereby workers receive 100% of the pay for working 80% of the time, but still delivering 100% of their usual output. The Scottish Greens and all its staff have adopted a 4-day working week and reported positive results. If we want to build a fairer and greener economy with good jobs, sustainable work, fair wages and economic security, then we need to be prepared to make big changes and think big, said MSP Maggie Chapman. An article written by Adam Robertson. The National News on Wednesday, the 6th of September. Hospitals have too few beds for the winter. An article written by Jane McLeod. Scotland's hospitals have too few beds for the overstretched NHS to deal with peaks in demand this winter, MSPs have been told, with a warning that there could again be an increased risk of death for patients. John Paul Loughry, Scottish Vice President of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine, said last winter had been the worst for a generation and the worst probably in the history of the NHS for those working in emergency care. He added that the summer months had failed to bring an easing of the pressure, telling MSPs on Holyrood's Health Committee that cuts to NHS bed numbers had probably gone too far. Mr. Loughry, a consultant in emergency medicine at the Queen Elizabeth University Hospital in Glasgow, also highlighted the tenacious number of people having to remain in hospital while they wait for care packages. In an evidence session on winter planning, he said he had extensively asked those in the other medical royal colleges for their view on the situation. The doctor told the committee the view was unanimous that this is no longer a winter problem. This is an NHS in crisis problem. Short-term measures put in place for winter months should only be crisis mitigation, Mr. Loughry added. He told MSPs the winter plan of last year focused on crisis mitigation and some short-term measures, but without a longer-term strategy to avoid further winters like we had in the last one. And we haven't really seen any abatement in the pressure on emergency departments, or indeed across primary care and all the acute specialities in the summer like we normally would. What we've seen this year is a decrease in our workforce, so we're seeing a dwindling of the workforce across all sectors in Scotland. And what we haven't seen so far is any future planning that involves more than just trying to deal with the next winter crisis. As well as hospitals having a workforce problem, Mr. Loughry said there were overall capacity problems, explaining these were partly as a result of a tenacious number of delayed discharges in hospital. But he added that over the last 10 to 15 years, the reduction in the acute and general bed base has probably gone too far, and we now have too few beds in Scotland in order to deal with these winter surges, on top of an already overcapacity and overstretched system. He told the committee that data from the National Records of Scotland had shown a 6% increase in mortality over last winter compared to the average. We can expect, unfortunately, similar risk of increased death over this winter, Mr. Loughry said. He added that there was a need to be honest with telling people what to expect over the coming winter, citing virtual consultations as one option. While he said holding consultations over platforms such as Zoom may take a bit of getting used to for some patients, he said that many consultations can happen in that virtual manner, especially in primary care. Caroline Lamb, the Chief Executive of NHS Scotland, said there was a need to support the system to manage unscheduled care as effectively as possible throughout the year. She told the committee, "I think we recognise our focus needs to be on improving the systems year-round, but there will always be points of surge and points of additional pressure. Winter has traditionally been one of those because of the increase in respiratory illnesses and also because of people having accidents due to adverse weather conditions." Ms. Lamb stressed that the NHS had reflected on last year's winter planning, adding that they had learned lessons. She told MSPs, "The approach we've taken this year has been to start much earlier, but also to absolutely engage in that whole system planning." SNP MSP David Torrance pressed her on when this year's winter plan would be published, saying last year's had been criticised for coming too late when it was published in October. Ms. Lamb replied the winter plan for this year would be put to Parliament in October, but added, "The difference from last year is the amount of work that's already gone into developing that plan." An article written by Jane McLeod. The National News on Wednesday, the 6th of September. Strike action in Scottish schools is called off ahead of a new pay offer. An article written by Adam Robertson. Strikes which could have caused a number of school closures across Scotland have been called off. Members of the GMB union in 10 councils, including janitors and cleaners, were due to strike next Wednesday and Thursday. However, the action has been halted as a goodwill gesture as talks over a pay deal continue. Councils are preparing to make a new offer, but if a deal is not agreed, there is likely to be widespread action by the GMB, Unison and Unite within weeks. The dispute involves non-teaching staff, including catering, cleaning, pupil support, administration and janitorial workers in schools and early years centres. The three unions have rejected an average pay increase of 5.5%, with a 99 pence an hour rise in the living wage for the lowest paid. COSLA had previously said the strong offer raised the local government living wage by 99 pence to £11.84 an hour. GMB Scotland had a mandate for strikes in Aberdeen, Clackmannanshire, the Western Isles, Dundee, Eastern Bartonshire, Falkirk, Glasgow, Orkney, Renfrewshire and in South Ayrshire. Unite members in 10 local authorities also voted to strike, while Unison members backed action in 24 of the 32 council areas. A COSLA spokesperson said, "There was a positive meeting of council leaders yesterday, and we hope to meet the trade union colleagues as soon as possible to discuss next steps." An article written by Adam Robertson. The National News on Wednesday, the 6th of September. Winter vaccination programme is launched. An article written by Jane McLeod. Scotland's winter vaccination programme has started, with a range of vulnerable groups being offered the vaccine against flu. Invitations to book or attend an appointment have already been sent to those eligible for a flu vaccine by post, by email or by text, depending on communication preferences. Flu is serious and even healthy people can become very ill from it. Flu cases were at their highest since 2018-2019 last year, with more than 14,000 confirmed cases across all age groups. The expansion of the flu programme to include secondary school pupils continues this winter, with all people between 50 and 64 years, all school-aged pupils, children aged 2 to 5 years and children aged 6 months to under 2 years at risk being eligible. Both flu and the COVID vaccines will be offered to people most vulnerable to illness and, where possible, administered at the same time. Dr. Claire Cameron, consultant in health protection at Public Health Scotland, said, "Getting vaccinated is the safest and most effective way to protect yourself against flu and COVID-19 this winter. Those eligible for a flu or flu and COVID vaccination this winter should look out for their invitation to book or attend their appointment." An article written by Jane McLeod.
From the National, Thursday the 7th of September, from the news section, RAC Concrete Risk Forces Scottish University to Close Part of Union, by Gregor Young. A Scottish university has closed parts of its student union building due to potentially dangerous concrete. A spokesperson for the University of Stirling described the use of reinforced autoclave aerated concrete, RAC, on campus as limited and said it was a precautionary measure. Structural engineers are working on site to address the issue. RAC was used in public buildings from the 1950s until the 1990s. The university was established in 1967. The spokesperson for the University of Stirling said, "The university has temporarily restricted access to localised areas of campus following the updated guidance on reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete. RAC was used in the construction of public sector buildings between the 1950s and mid-1990s, including in very limited areas of our campus. The safety of our community is paramount, and we have taken this action as a precautionary measure while we work with specialists, including on-site structural engineers, to carry out further investigations where necessary." And that article was by Gregor Young. From the National, Thursday the 7th of September, from the politics section, SNP MP hits out at Glasgow Labour leader's brass neck on finance, by Adam Robertson. SNP MP Alison Thewlis has hit out at the leader of Glasgow Labour after he attacked the city's financial situation, but admitted that his own party's leadership had led to a £770 million bill that it is still having to pay off. Councillor George Redden claimed that the Scottish Government's commitments to local government have fallen far short of the financial realities faced by the country's biggest city. It comes after Birmingham City Council, which is Labour-run, effectively declared itself bankrupt. Writing in his latest column for the Glasgow Times, Redman said he had previously warned it wouldn't be long before a council found itself in deep financial trouble. He said, "The challenges faced by Birmingham are certainly sobering. A deficit that has run into hundreds of millions of pounds, cuts to essential services, and a community struggling to reconcile with the local government's financial imprudence. Remind you of anywhere?" The reality is that Glasgow is also on the edge of a fiscal cliff. The ever-increasing demands on housing, public transport, healthcare and social services are stretching our coffers to an alarming degree. He said the time had come to reset the relationship with Holyrood and called on Humza Yousaf to address the financial realities facing Glasgow. "We need an open dialogue, free from political manoeuvring and full of practical problem solving." Theolis retweeted the column on Twitter/X and said, "The utter brass neck of this. George Redmond was part of the Glasgow Labour administration which caused the equal pay scandal. It was the SNP who finally put things right. The only parallel here is that Birmingham Labour also created an equal pay scandal." Her thoughts were echoed by Keith Brown, who said, "Labour helpful in reminding us of the appalling consequences of Labour control. Given the misery meted out over many years by Labour to Glasgow's female employees, it has taken an SNP council to deal with this injustice and keep the council solvent." The row relates to an equal pay dispute involving female city council employees that goes back to a 2017 Court of Session decision, ruling that both the council's payment protection scheme and its workforce pay and benefits review discriminated against women workers. Last November, Glasgow City Council agreed to pay out a total of £770 million to settle the dispute. SNP Councillor Rory Kelly wrote, "£35 million a year for the next 30 years to clean up Labour's pay discrimination? That's £35 million every year not being spent in the services and fabric of the city, thanks to Labour incompetence. The plans mean that properties, including Glasgow's Kelvin Grove Museum and Art Galleries, and City Chambers, will be sold to a council-owned property firm before being leased back." And that article was by Adam Robertson. From the National, it's Thursday the 7th of September, from the Culture section. "Pressures on Scottish beauty spot sparks camper crackdown plan." Article by content editor Xander Eliards. "The Highland Council is looking to introduce parking restrictions on a popular road in the Scottish National Park amid a crackdown on motorhomes. The local authority is running a consultation on restrictions on overnight parking on the Glenmuir Road, C1126, which runs from Coilum Bridge up to the Quarcast Ski Lift car park in the Cairngorms. The route is popular with visitors to the Cairngorms as it runs from near the tourist hotspot of Avonmore southeast into the wildest areas of the UK's largest national park. The council is also looking to bring in daytime parking charges along the road near Loch Morlach, a famed beauty spot in the area. A council spokesperson said the move came amid pressures on the road system, saying that managing visitors to that area of the Cairngorms National Park has been a challenge. The proposals, which are currently out for public consultation, would see a maximum stay limit of 12 hours imposed between 7am and 10pm, with no overnight parking allowed. Charges would be for £2 for 1 hour, £4 for 6 hours, and £5 for 12 hours. Campaigners told the Badenoch and Strathbay Herald that due to the rural area of the road, hardly anyone would be parking for less than an hour, making £4 a default charge. While disallowing any parking whatsoever between 10pm and 7am, can be seen as a means to control campervan and motorhome parking, no provision has been made for those simply enjoying longer days out or for those undertaking multiple day journeys," Cairngorms Runners member Colin Cadden told that paper. A Highland Council spokesperson said, "Visitor management in the area of Glenmuir has been a challenge in this part of the national park. In light of the pressures being experienced and, as a roads authority, the Highland Council has published some additional proposals to improve the control of vehicle activities. These proposals are at the public consultation stage, and all feedback will be reviewed before further steps are taken in this process. Any restrictions on the public road are enforced by Highland Council parking enforcement staff. A statement of reason for the proposal says that the order will assist with traffic management in general, and specifically relating to congestion and unsafe / unmanaged parking experienced on the C1126, Glenmore Main Road, and Glenmore Lodge Access Road. The Council's consultation says restrictions would introduce waiting and loading restrictions and on-street pay and display parking, and affects the road C1126 Glenmore Road between its junction with Rotherhithe Murchison Lodge Access Road eastwards to the snow gates for Cairngorm Mountain, and a section of road at the entrance to the Quarkas Ski Lift car park, and the access road leading to Glenmore Lodge from its junction with the C1126 eastwards to its junction with the Glenmore Lodge. And that article was by Xander Eliards. From the National, Thursday the 7th of September. From the news section, exclusive. Scottish MPs round on Penny Mordaunt over offensive rat comments. By political reporter Hamish Morrison. Penny Mordaunt has been blasted as offensive over comments she made in Parliament describing Scottish cities as rat-infested places where people suffer Victorian diseases. The leader of the House of Commons went on a lengthy rant against the SNP during an exchange on Thursday morning, in which she also speculated the party may try to blame its grievances on historical wrongs, such as the Highland clearances. Asked by the SNP Shadow Commons leader Deirdre Brock whether the government would schedule a debate on things she had learned from her recent trips to Scotland to speak at events during the Fringe. In response, Mordaunt piles scorn on Scotland, telling MPs, "She invites me to tell this house what I've learned in my very pleasant trips to Scotland over the summer. I did learn that Scotland has slower economic growth than England. I was shocked to learn that Victorian diseases have actually returned to certain cities in Scotland, such as rickets. That Glasgow's rat problem is now so bad, it is precluding bin men actually accessing certain streets because it's too dangerous for them." The Commons leader went on to accuse the SNP of being never short of a grievance, adding, "It is now running out of excuses." She went on, "I look forward to next week, what those excuses might be. The execution of Mary Queen of Scots, the Highland clearances, the Hundred Years' War. The grotesque chaos and appalling public services her constituents are suffering from, and the rest of the Scottish people are entirely down to the SNP alone." Her comments were met with fury from Glasgow MPs, who described Mordaunt as seeming more like an internet meme than a cabinet minister. Stuart MacDonald, the MP for Glasgow South, said the minister was pandering to angry corners of unionist Tory internet. He told The National, "Another pre-scripted rant that makes Penny Mordaunt seem more like an internet meme than a cabinet minister, and all to try to keep her name warm for the upcoming Tory leadership contest. Having got carried away with heroically holding a sword, about the only achievement she'll be remembered for, she now thinks her job is to trend on Twitter. So it's no real surprise that she trades in disinformation and junk news to satisfy the angry corners of the unionist Tory internet. The truth is that the leader of the House is just another decaying minister in a decaying government that Scots cannot wait to see the back of. I look forward to seeing that trending at the ballot box." Glasgow North East MP Anne McLaughlin added, "Tory ministers visiting Glasgow and feigning concern has been going on for decades, but government after government enact the most brutal cuts and heinous policies that attack the poorest in society. There are a million things Ms Mordaunt could do to make people's lives better in Glasgow. Remove the two-child cap, stop benefits sanctions, or make the wealthy pay their fair share of tax. But that is of no interest to her or any other Tory minister." Speaking after the exchange, Brock said Mordaunt said it was time the Tories recognised what they could learn from Holyrood. She said, "Penny Mordaunt's comments are typically as offensive as they are ill-informed." Today, the Institute of Fiscal Studies has published a report showing social mobility in England is at its worst over 50 years, with a growing wealth gap between North and South, and inheritance becoming more influential in determining life chances. Meanwhile, the Scottish Government is using the devolved powers it has to tackle inequality and poverty, rolling out universal free primary school meals, and increasing the Scottish child payment to £25 per week, as well as maintaining free prescriptions, free bus travels for over 60s, and free tuition. As Professor Danny Darling has noted, Scotland already has a lower proportion of children living in poverty than the most affluent region of England, the South East, and is showing the rest of the UK the route to a fairer society. As the UK government unravels day by day, the SNP are getting on with delivering a progressive agenda that has left Scotland with lower unemployment, lower child poverty, and not a single day in the NHS lost to industrial action. We know the Tories hate hearing positive things about Scotland, but it's time they recognise what they could learn from Holyrood. Rory Kelly, SNP councillor for the North East of Glasgow, added, "Rats and Victorian diseases are no doubt familiar to Penny Mordaunt, given the company she keeps at the Tory benches." Glasgow would, of course, be faring better if it were not for 15 years of Tory austerity and a £750 million Labour pay discrimination bill. But our administration has steered this city through some of the most difficult times that it's ever faced, despite the best efforts of those who would delight in its failure. A Scottish Greens spokesperson said, "Penny Mordaunt should be utterly ashamed. It tells us everything we need to know about the contempt that the Tory government holds for Scotland. It is precisely because of their cruel cuts and damaging policies that poverty is once again stalking our streets and that people and families in all corners of our country are struggling with a cost of living crisis that they caused by trashing the economy. Rather than indulging in such crude and dated stereotypes, she should be reflecting on her own role in propping up 13 years of some of the cruelest and most incompetent Tory governments in history. Given her most significant political contribution has been losing to both Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak in Tory leadership elections, we can all be grateful that Penny Mordaunt's hands will never be on the keys to number 10. And that article was by Hamish Morrison.
That concludes this week's edition of the National Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Hume Review and tell your friends about our service.